Accession number 27244, Mr. John Lincoln, Reel 11. Now, we were talking about your time as a state warden. I mean, it's a funny title in a way. I thought welfare officer would have been more appropriate.
Yes,
was there an estate warden? I mean, that is not what it means in life over here, is it?
Not what it means at all. It's just a name. I don't know where they got the name from.
So you were just a welfare officer, or NCO, that's what you were. There was no, you weren't responsible for the administration of the estate.
Oh yes, that's the whole thing. You see, we administered the estate.
Now tell me about that side of thing, administration of the estate, as opposed to the welfare.
Right, the general administration of the day-to-day running of the estates. The army in Germany have huge estates of money quarters. The regiments move in and out every 3 years. It was our responsibility, A, to maintain the housing stock, to move the regiments in and out when they changed over, to ensure that all the mundane things like the rubbish was disposed of, that the German services, the German public services. So we worked very strongly, very closely with the German administration in the town. And this is all run through what is known as the housing office, and this is you have a retired officer usually, who is the garrison housing officer, and he is in charge overall of the running of that part of the garrison, and he has a staff of people like, i.e., the wardens, the staff assistants, and all the rest of them that go to make up the team. So it's a dual purpose. Welfare was one side of it, but the maintenance and running of the money quarters was the other side of it.
Was there much trouble with people smashing up houses?
Oh yeah, well you always get that. You find people don't respect things which are not theirs. And it depends on A, their background, where they came from, it's how they treated the housing stock. And, of course, it was our job to make sure that they didn't smash them up and maintain them and repair them. We ran a central repair service through the PSA, and they'd report damages, etc., etc., and we'd, if possible, get them repaired. It wasn't quite always possible to get them repaired, but we...
And you'd bill the soldier responsible.
Oh, yes, you'd bill the soldier responsible, from the high to the low. I once had to give the garrison commander, who was a brigadier, I had to give him a bill. He wasn't a happy teddy bear.
What had he done?
Well, he lived in one of a big mansion, and we had it fully redecorated when he moved in. And he had two sons who had posters of motorbikes, and they stuck them on the walls with blue tack. And blue tack, and the German plaster, if you can imagine, is not the same. It's not skimmed like we have plaster here. It's just plaster. And of course, there was huge grease spots all over these bedrooms where they'd had these pictures. And of course, I had to charge the dear brigadier to have them redecorated, a redecoration charge, because they'd been beautiful when he'd moved in, and now they were not so beautiful. And it was quite an embarrassing situation, because he was very upset. I'm not paying your bill. I said, I'm sorry, sir. Those marks weren't there when you moved in. They're there now, therefore, you pay to put them right. Well, I'm the garrison commander. I said, well, I'm sorry. I'm afraid you, in this particular case, you are a householder in this garrison, and you have to pay repairs that would put your damage. And, eventually, with ill grace, he paid up.
Now, any stories from this time that just give us an idea of the sort of problems you were facing, or is it just...
Well, for instance, I mean, I had a condominium of 140 flats in 10-storey blocks. And, of course, there's many, many things that you're not allowed to do in a flat. And we had German housemeisters who were employed by the people who owned the flats, because these are all hired, you see. They do not belong to the army. And, of course, he had all sorts of problems, but I was called out one summer's evening. There was a fire on the veranda of a fourth story flat, and the fire brigade were out, and the world and his dog were there. And when we finally got to the sorting it all out, the story goes that, you see, they weren't allowed barbecues in a block of flats. This individual had had a barbecue on the veranda of his flat. And like most servicemen, they are not very practical people when it comes to round the house. And he had a bottle of igniter liquid, and he squirted it on this barbecue, and it exploded. And the whole flat was burnt out. The flat below, where the water had run off, the fire liquid had run down onto the veranda below, it was burnt, and there was smoke damage in the flat above. And his house, his flat was gutted. And when we finally got the investigation, the damage came to something like 9,000 marks, the damage to this flat. He, would you believe, was in the intelligence corps? And he was not a popular teddy bear.
I presume he wouldn't have to pay for that. I presume he...
Oh, yes, he'd damaged it, he'd done it, he
so
got the bill.
So he'd get the bill for 9,000 marks?
He got the bill for 9,000 marks. And the funny part about it was, well, it wasn't funny really, he'd not paid his insurance policy. He terminated his fire insurance several weeks before this event happened. And he was left with a bill of 9,000 marks. Not a happy teddy bear. But the laugh was, as I say, he was in the intelligence corps. Of course, everybody fell about, you know, and I thought that was hilarious. As soldiers do, they've got a twisted sense of humour.
Any other stories or incidents or things you remember?
Yes, well, there was always things going, especially on that particular estate. There was always sort of things going. I mean, there was a phantom shitter, would you believe? He would deflocate into a paper bag, put with and leave it in the lift. And there were several occasions when this was found. And of course, all the women folk were up in arms. And we tried our best to find this particular individual. We never did. We never found him. And there's all little anecdotes like that, you know. It's I could write a book. Probably several volumes of life in the money quarters estate, you know. But it was an interesting job, as I say.
Were there moral problems with the wives when they
yes,
husbands
always,
were away?
Yes,
was that a big problem?
Not that big, but it happened. It depended on the regiment, which regiments were in at the time. Cause some regiments are worse than others. But you've heard the story of the Omo packet on the bathroom windowsill, you know, old man out. And that's an invitation to whoever wants to come in and savour the pleasures of married life illicitly. Quite a lot of that goes on. But as I say, it depends on the regiment, where they're from, what their background is. But, and then, of course, there was always people having affairs and so on and so forth. This would, because, you know, the old bush telegraph chats along. There was an occasion, for instance, where I was called out one night to a block of flats where the televisions, you know, it's a bad habit that people in Murray Quarters have. They can't be bothered to buy a proper aerial. And what they do is they use a coat hanger as an aerial and they stick it in the aerial socket, built an aerial socket in their Murray Quarter. And this, of course, was transmitting. They were showing pornographic movies in this particular flat. And of course, it was transmitted to all the televisions in the block through the internal aerial system because someone was using a coat hanger as an aerial. But that's one of those things, you know. The military police called me out, and there was quite a rumpus over that one. But just the little things soldiers get up to, you know.
You were enjoying this posting from the sound of it, and this is from what 81 to 94. That's when you retired.
Yeah.
Anything else before we, you know, finish that party? Because there's just your cadets thing to come. But anything else about your time there?
No, very enjoyable. We were there for 13 and a half years. It became home to us. my children now always refer to Paderborn as being home, because they were there most of their formative lives, you know. They went to university from there, they came back from university and went into their jobs. My son went to Sandhurst and so on. And they look upon it as home. We had a very happy time there. I have lots of friends. Cost me a fortune every Christmas and Christmas cards to Germany at 42 pence a time.
So what about your retirement? I mean, this is when you finished in the army proper. How was it handled, your retirement?
Well, I was posted back to United Kingdom 6 months before I was due to leave.
So where was that to?
To Edinburgh. It was my choice. We bought this house. And
That's it, Livingston South.
Yeah. And I was attached to headquarters, Army Scotland, for my last 6 months.
What as?
As an estate warden, funnily enough, in the estate office. And you just do your discharge documentation, which takes quite some time because you've got to have medicals and all the rest of it, you know.
Did you actually have duties or, you know, I mean, did you actually carry out the role as a state warden?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, I worked. I ran the officer's estate at Craigie Hall for the last 6 months.
And what about the process of being not demobilised, but being retired?
Yeah, well it is, but you've got to do all your documentation, you do your medicals and so on and so forth, you do job interviews, and the army have a system whereby they tell you all sorts of rhubarb what you're going to do when you're outside, because you never do, because no one wants anybody at 55. We're too highly qualified for a start. The civilian firms are frightened to death.
And how did you feel about leaving the army? I mean, you're 55. Had you had enough of it
I would have gone on. Well, I joined the cadet service straight away.
Well, let's talk about your post-op. So you leave in, when did you actually finally finish in 1994?
On my 55th birthday, the 30th of June.
1994.
1994.
And your post-service career, I mean, let's first, you were living here in Livingston, well, it's Livingston South, near the train station, I know. What about getting a job? I mean, because this is something, you're...
That's right. Well, I went to the local work exchange, right, the local job exchange, and was politely informed by the young lady there. It was pretty pointless me signing on. I was too highly qualified for all the jobs they had to offer. And there were much, much more worthy people, not so well qualified, to do the jobs. So I said, oh, thank you very much. And I went out and found something up for myself. As it happened, I've been a churchman all my life, and we went to the local church here. And the job of Kirk Beadle came up. Poor chap was there, had a heart attack, and the job became vacant, and I took up the job of Kirk Beadle.
Now, what is a Kirk Beadle?
Well, he's sort of the church manager. In the Church of Scotland, he's known as the Beadle.
Like a church warden?
Like a church warden, yeah. Like the Verger.
And you've done that ever since?
Done that ever since, yes.
So, in a sense, although you had some initial difficulties, you did get a job off your own bat that you're happy in.
That's right.
Did you have a problem acclimatising to civilian lifestyle, as they call it?
You always have that. Don't forget the army's a way of life. I'd been a soldier since I was 19 years old. And I mean, that's a long time, 37 years. You miss it all. You miss the comradeship. Oh, that sounds twee. It's not really that at all. But you miss the way of life because, you know, every 3 years you move on to something else or you get a different job and so on and so forth. I mean, the last 14...
More variety.
There's much more variety, yeah.
What about just the military way of doing something? I mean, were you able to, because you'd been in welfare, did that mean you were better able to temper certain military habits?
I think so, yes. Because I'd been dealing with people doing welfare and so on and so forth. I wasn't so brainwashed, if you like, want to put it like that.
I wouldn't have said, I mean, but you weren't frustrated in your civilian job by the speed of civilians, you know, or the way civilians behave. You were used to dealing with civilians.
Oh, I'd be dealing both sides of the house, you see, for several years. So it was no shock to the system to come out into civil life completely.
Now, tell us about your... Well, the one thing you do still to this day is you're involved in the cadets. Now, which cadets are you?
The Sea Cadet Corps.
Now, why the Sea Cadets after all this time?
Well, what happened was, you see, when you're getting your final interviews for resettlement, they say to you, will you do cadet service? Are you willing to do cadet service? Because it's strictly voluntary and it's can be very time consuming. And I said, well, yes, I don't mind. I mean, I've done so many jobs in the army in my life. I was the local garrison scout leader in Senilaga. So I was used to dealing with youth and being on the welfare side, used to dealing with people. So I said, yes, I'll. I'd also done quite a lot of work with the Duke of Edinburgh's award. So I said, well, fine, yes. You can put my name down. And when I came out, I got a letter from the Combined Cadet Services saying, you know, we've heard you're willing to, what's it, and ta-ra-ta-ra. And Duke of Edinburgh's award, you see. And at that time, the guy that was doing the Duke of Edinburgh's award for the Sea Cadet Corps, the local Sea Cadet Corps, retired. And I was at a Masonic lodge, and this chap said to me, you know, oh, there's a vacancy come up with us. Would you like to? So I went for an interview at Rosyth at the headquarters of the Sea Cadet Corps and got the job. And I was commissioned into the Sea Cadet Corps as a sub-lieutenant to do Duke of Edinburgh's award.
And tell us a bit about... Are you still a sub-lieutenant or have they promoted you?
I'm a lieutenant commander now.
So you've got a quicker promotion with the Navy than...
Yes, indeed.
Now, tell us about the nature of your work with it's the Sea Cadet Corps, is it?
The Sea Cadet Corps.
Tell us, what do you do for them? Obviously, you started by doing Duke of Edinburgh.
That's right. Well, I am now what they call a district officer. I'm the district administrator for an area in Glasgow, or it's based in Glasgow, which is known as the Clyde North District. I have 8 units I look after, and I administer them, look after the personnel, the recruiting, and all the rest of it, and travel about and visit them. My father's once Fort George in one direction, Campbelltown in the other direction, and the nearest one to me is Airdrie and Corbridge, which is just 25 miles up the road. And I am the district administrator.
So very similar to the sort of work you've been doing in the army.
Yeah, very similar.
Do you enjoy the work?
Oh yes, very much so. Because there's so many things you can do for children nowadays, which is not a common run of things that the children can do for themselves, because children basically haven't got the same motivation as when I was a child. There's too many distractions.
So what you did that from what year? From what, 95?
Yeah, I did it from 95.
To now, 2000?
To now, yeah, I'm still going strong, yes.
And what do you think the value of Sea Cadets is? What does it give to children?
Well, it gives them something which they don't normally get from the school anymore. It's a good hobby. We teach them practical life skills, and they don't get that at school. They get comradeship in a sort of a mildly regulated environment. They have to do as they're told, if you like. And that's what they don't have to do at school. And you'll find they're very, very enthusiastic, because we do things which are not the normal run-of-the-mill at school. I mean, for instance, we are at the moment planning a summer holiday for a week on the Isle of Arran, where they will do offshore sailing in our power launches. They'll learn nautical navigation. At the same time, they'll be doing Duke of Edinburgh's award on the island, from the base where we will be based out into the Isle of Arran. So they've got two aspects, and we'll probably take probably 30-40 children on that. The age group we have is from 12-year-old to 18-year-old. So, and they're both sexes. So you've got a real cross-section of life for them.
Now, you obviously enjoyed your army experiences. But do you want to sum up by just telling us why the army is so important to you?
Well, it was my chosen profession. From being a child, I'd always wanted to be a soldier. And I got my wish when National Service came along. I had a boring job in Civvy Street. I was a bank clerk. I could not see myself going on into my middle years as working in a bank, thank you very much. That would have been dead boring. So I got the best of both worlds. I got an interesting job to do. I had a variety of jobs over the 30-odd years I was in the army. I enjoyed most of them. I mean, you can't say you enjoyed all of them because you don't. But I enjoyed most of them. And I look back with fond memory on my time in the army.
Thank you very much.